coming up on today's program.
And it would bring together people from all different sectors to determine what we're using it for, how we're using it, what best practices are, and make any recommendations to the legislature.
How our state government is preparing for the widespread use of AI. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. Our in-depth look at the use of AI coming up later in the program. Thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Up first, this Black History Month, we're sharing stories about community, memory, and why radio preservation matters. It's Legacy Listening, HBCU Radio Memories, our series featuring excerpts from oral histories collected by the HBCU Radio Preservation Project. Here's Malik Perkins, a graduate of Central State University in Wilberforce, Ohio, with his radio memories.
My name is Malik Perkins, and I was an on-air producer for WCSU between my junior and senior year, so that would have been 2012 to 2014. I was born and raised on the northwestern side of Dayton, Ohio. Dayton actually had two hip-hop stations when I was a kid, 92.1 and 102.9. So I remember listening to these radio personalities, and this is before social media, so you didn't know what these people looked like. They were just voices. But I do remember being captivated by it, but still not really seeing it as a viable thing to do. I think what really made me want to get into communications via radio is when I visited Central State for the first time and I saw a radio station, because I had never really seen a radio station before. I always joke that the only thing I knew about radio when I started was turning it on and turning it off. So I had to figure out, okay, how can I get in here and actually learn how the stuff works? It was a jazz radio station. And there was this thing where students were like, we want hip hop and R&B. And Professor Clay, who was over it at my time, he was explaining to them like, no, you already have hip hop stations. This is a public radio station. You have to have a niche that allows you to generate income and allow you to have your own market that you can dominate. I remember him explaining that to me. And I remember saying to myself, if you learn how a radio station works, it really doesn't matter what it is. You just need to get in and learn how this stuff works. Professor Clay had a very much Karate Kid wax on, wax off style. So you're doing things and don't really realize how it correlates till later. My first day I came in, all we did was just watch the audio levels, meaning that little green bar that goes up like that. I'm like, so that's all I'm doing. Yep. Once I got that down and didn't blow anything up, we would start logging some of the music for the show. So huge library. This is CDs are still a thing. Cassette tapes are still a thing. And even some records are back there. Now you're learning who plays different instruments. Because when you have a jazz radio show, you have to say, okay, I played a trumpet this hour. I need a saxophone. Oh, I haven't played a flute in a while. Oh, I need a bass. But there's no way I would have known that if I wasn't doing that. But it just felt like grunt work at the time. I think school might have started. I just get called in one day and Professor Clay's like, oh, you're going on today. I'm like, what? So he just threw me out there. First show, not good at all. Second show, not good. But I think maybe about a month in, it got decent. It was called Jazz at Sundown, and it was a contemporary show. So it was new artists. Where my friend's show, his was like the classics, Miles Davis and things like that. I was playing like Lettucey and people that were a little bit newer, Bob Baldwin. The student body, especially the younger people, they were looking and realizing like, oh, this is what you have to do. Yeah, it's jazz, but look what he's doing. Look at what they're doing. I think it was a starting point of that. If I see something I want to do, and I carry this mentality now that I'm willing to say to myself, I might not be good at this right now. I don't know anything about this, but if I see something I want to do, I will put the time in. I will go through the, this was a bad show. This was a whatever. This was a disaster day, and work at it until I eventually get where I want to be. As cliche as it sounds, but you know, from the radio station to becoming a TV reporter to even working at Ohio State, like I just believe that if I set a goal for myself, I'm willing to work at it until I get there. I think HBCU radio will always be special no matter what form it takes. So being a part of that legacy in an era where some may feel that HBCU's future is a little bit shaky, seeing that we're doing all of this work to preserve history. I think that's really cool, just making sure that we have that legacy to pass on to future generations.
That was CSU alum Malik Perkins. Today, he's a communications specialist at The Ohio State University. Legacy Listening, HBCU Radio Memories, is produced by the HBCU Radio Preservation Project at the Center for Radio Preservation and Archives at WISO. You can learn more about radio preservation at WISO.org. Well, you probably know that together with StoryCorps, WISO invited community members to participate in One Small Step and connect with someone in the region they had never met before to talk about life in America today. This week, it's Jen Miller of Inglewood and Diane Flick of Centerville. They reflect on how political polarization, often fueled by those in power, constrain family relationships, and how trying to build connections across political lines can help repair that divide. Jen speaks first.
Have political discussions strained any of your relationships with friends, family, coworkers, or classmates?
I try really hard not to let it. Every once in a while, there's something that may cause a little tension in the room, but only with people close to me. Mm-hmm. So how about you?
That's fair. So I would have to say yes, that like political discussions have strained relationships, specifically with my family, because we're polar opposites there. And my mom always wants to talk politics. And I'm like, why? Because we don't agree. But she'll bring up topics that are very sensitive. And I'm like, okay, I'm willing to discuss this with you. At the end of the day, like, you're still my mom. I'm still going to love you. We can have our differences, which I appreciate. You know, it's never gotten to a point where I'm like, I'm cutting her off, because I can't. She's my mom. Right. I mean, technically I could, but I'm not going to do that. So yeah. Her and I feel very passionately about... She's very pro-life. I'm very pro-choice. Mm-hmm. And her bringing up conversations like that have put a strain on things, because mm-hmm. she doesn't understand how I can feel so passionately about it, something that she also feels so passionately about in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. So before Trump was reelected, we had a lot of political discussions. So then when he won, I felt... like
the first time or the second
time? The second time.
Got it.
I felt like I took it personal. I took her vote personally.
Oh, wow.
So it was hard for me to like, not going to cry.
Okay. But it's very hard not to, you know, take everything that we, thank you. Everything that we had talked about prior, and to not take her one vote personally. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. And I had a hard time talking to her just in general. Because she knew how I felt. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like we do, as a country, need to find a middle ground.
Like, I just feel so sad. Like, that's just so sad to hear. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Your family. And I think a lot about, like, who profits from the things that you believe? You know, who stands to gain? And I just think like this very oppositional culture has been created because people do stand to gain from it. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us are just pawns in these greedy people's sick little game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, maybe I'm catastrophizing, but like, I think about that quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feed that dragon, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Have you, like, I've been a poll worker for the first time in my life in the last couple of years. I've done it several times and I love it so much. It is exhausting, but it is just like one of the most, like, if you're feeling kind of like, oh man, what is America even doing? Yeah. Like, go be a poll worker, because okay. like those people who do that, they're just literally serving their community, and you are not allowed to dress politically, and you're not really supposed to talk about it. Like, something else that people don't know, at least in Ohio, at every polling place, there has to be a minimum number of registered Democrats and a minimum number of registered Republicans.
Interesting.
Like, we are really not going to make it if we don't really put our hearts and heads together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was Diane Flick and Jen Miller. One Small Step with WYSO is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and presented by the Charles F. Kettering Foundation. Up next, an in-depth look at AI. First, last year, the Malta and McConnellsville Fire Department in Southeast Ohio tested an artificial intelligence tool to improve emergency care with promising results. We hear all about it in Today from the Ohio Newsroom.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom, a rural fire department using AI.
Support comes from Ohio CASA. CASA volunteers are everyday Ohioans who advocate for thousands of children experiencing abuse or neglect, giving them a voice in court. Learn more at ohiocasa.org.
This week, the Ohio Newsroom is looking at the impact of artificial intelligence on the state. I'm Erin Gottsacker. The Malta and McConnellsville Fire Department in Southeast Ohio serves an area so rural, the closest trauma center is at least an hour's drive from their coverage area. That makes the work of paramedics and first responders there all the more important. Josh Tilton knows this firsthand. A paramedic and EMS instructor himself, he's now defending his thesis for a doctorate in artificial intelligence. Last year, he worked with the Malta and McConnellsville Fire Department to roll out an AI system in an effort to improve patient outcomes there. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how's it going, Erin?
Good, thank you. So the system you rolled out sounds pretty technical. It's called Artificial Intelligence Quality Assurance. Can you walk us through how it works?
What we basically do is we take the run data from the electronic patient care reporting, and then we wash it of all protected health information. And then put those variables into a closed machine learning system that really kind of highlights on an individual level down to the practitioner where we can be better. And then from there, issues them continuing education within those identified sectors. So they're constantly getting better every time they go out on a run.
Got it. So the Malta and McConnellsville Fire Department spent the last year testing the system out. How did it go?
I know beyond a measure of a doubt that it helped patients. So we were lucky enough to see care that was already amazing get better across the board.
Can you give us a specific example of a situation where it helped?
Very early on, it identified that chest pain was actually an area that we needed to address. And as a paramedic myself for 20 plus years, I didn't believe the data. So I ran the modeling again and again and again. And probably about, I'd say, the fourth or fifth time that it told me, no, this is really the area that you need to concentrate on. We started to dig in and do a lot of very targeted training. And then we saw direct results of that. We had atypical MI presentations that were caught early that normally wouldn't be the traditional, my chest hurts, it feels like someone is sitting on my chest. This was things like back pain, shoulder pain, stomach pain that we would view atypically as not cardiac related, but because we had had such an intensive focus on cardiac trainings, we saw a very, very large spike in treatment. We were able to capture those atypical MIs and direct them to cath labs early.
Wow. What are the limits of this technology? Was there anything you found lacking?
To be honest with you, Erin, the biggest limitation is going to be budgetary constraints. You know, paramedic, I'm an EMS instructor that's paying out of pocket to run the machine learning models as a doctoral student. And so the limitation there was really how much processing power I could afford myself. But when we start to look at the government agencies and getting those line items in closed machine learning models, it does unfortunately take money to operate.
Do you think the system is worth it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's undeniable. Just the predictive modeling that we had alone out of those neural networks showed anywhere between a 40 and a 60% increase in patient outcome of specific disease etiology. So I don't know how anyone can afford to not do something like this, especially in this day and age when this is all readily available.
That was Josh Tilton talking about an AI system he developed to help emergency services better serve their patients. That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
And there are a lot of issues surrounding artificial intelligence coming down the pike. We continue our look at this extremely significant issue as it continues to grow and social media becomes more of a daily influence in the lives of Ohioans. State lawmakers are taking notice. There are dozens of bills in the legislature right now that are designed to deal with artificial intelligence, but several are stalled like a download on bad Wi-Fi. State House correspondent Joe Ingles has the story.
Republican Representative Mike Odioso says Ohio has already entered the age of AI.
Everyone is going to have to be a computer scientist in some way going forward.
So Odioso wants to change educational standards to require students in Ohio to take one unit of computer science before they graduate from high school.
I think you have to understand the logic of AI. And by extension, its weaknesses, its problems, being able to spot AI nonsense.
Republican Representative Thaddeus Claggett wants a state law to make it clear that AI cannot be recognized as a person in Ohio.
Which means they cannot be spouses, officers, property holders, employees, employers under Ohio law.
Democratic Representative Christine Cockley thinks the state needs an AI commission.
And it would bring together people from all different sectors to determine what we're using it for, how we're using it, what best practices are, and make any recommendations to the legislature.
Cockley is also working with Republican co-sponsor Representative Ty Matthews on two other pieces of AI legislation. One would put limits on how mental health providers could use AI to ensure diagnosis and treatment is prescribed by the provider, not the technology. Another would require developers and platforms to take action to prevent AI from giving out information about how someone could hurt or kill themselves and direct them to sources for therapy instead. Republican Senator Bill Blessing has similar legislation.
At the highest level, it seeks to criminalize AI-generated sexual material, for example. It seeks to go after AI-generated voice. Another good point here in that identity fraud is a major problem in the sense that AI can now literally sound exactly like somebody else and defraud senior citizens out of, you know, their finances if they think it's one of their children calling them asking for money. I mean, who wouldn't be fooled by something like that?
Blessing's bill could levy felonies against companies that use AI to spread pornographic material or defraud someone. Blessing says the tech industry has been pushing back on allowing the state to regulate AI. Matthews notes a lot of this legislation could be taken out of the legislature's hands if the federal government decides to regulate AI instead. And if that happens, Matthews says one of his bills will provide a special verification process dictated by the industry and the state.
We're allowing the Attorney General to essentially license a third-party verification process. For an example, I call it the green check mark, right? The industry will decide on what are some, you know, standards to put in place that they think are acceptable. And then you can opt in as a AI company to get this essentially green check mark, if you will, that our AI platform is safe under these standards.
It's not just AI itself that lawmakers are targeting. Senate Democratic leader Nikki Antonio says her members are concerned about data centers that come along with AI and are proposing several bills.
We actually have a suite of bills that will address things like responsibility when it comes to the grid, tax break repeals, really making sure that data centers will invest in local communities if they get the go-ahead and the green light by the local community to even be there. We are very concerned, and so we're looking at some legislation that will regard home rule for those data centers. That means that local communities can say yay or nay to one coming into their community, and definitely using water and resources responsibly.
While lawmakers are looking at these and other bills to put guardrails on AI, they say the industry is growing so fast that it's tough for them to keep up with it. Joe Ingles at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. The League of Women Voters of Greater Dayton, the NAACP Dayton Branch, and the Dayton Bar Association came together to voice their commitment to democratic values and to celebrate those who stand up for the rule of law. That voice and those who stood up were celebrated during the Heroes and Hardships presentation at Sinclair College on Tuesday. Before the event, local attorney Gary Lepla, who is also a member of the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, and past president of the Dayton Bar Association, talked to WISO's Mike Frazier about the honorees.
First of all, we're going to highlight some of the real heroes in support of the rule of law, including this state of Ohio League of Women Voters, which has been so active on voting amendments in the legislature and challenges. And the law firm WilmerHale, whose largest single office in this country is actually in Montgomery County. And finally, the great Jesse Gooding, who was one of the all-time civil rights pioneers and lives among us, and we will honor him as well. So the three organizations have a chance to collaborate with all three of us together for the first time. And secondly, to highlight some individuals and organizations that should be highlighted for their tremendous work.
What was the catalyst for this event?
We've tried to refocus on DEI efforts and other positives, such as the rule of law, and be more active. And there's been a persistent feeling among the DEI section of the Dayton Bar that we wanted to reach out beyond that, reach out to the larger community. And various individuals within that group do some good brainstorming. And one of the thoughts was, my goodness, Jesse Gooding is among us, and we should be recognizing him. We felt for a long time that WilmerHale, which has acted very courageously under a lot of pressure, ought to be recognized, and we so appreciate them in our legal community. And finally, the League of Women Voters of Ohio, which has worked with the ACLU and other groups persistently and consistently to support the right to vote, the rule of law, and related issues.
You mentioned pressure that was placed on the WilmerHale law firm. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
They've done a lot of things that show great courage, and they've taken up causes in support of the rule of law that shows great courage. There was a time when various law firms in this country were challenged and their right to access federal meetings and related matters was challenged. Some made deals, and WilmerHale went to court and prevailed. They're not the only one, but they prevailed in a fashion that, regardless of how anyone feels about the politics of it, it showed great courage. We have for a long time felt that we need to stand up and recognize that courage.
Tell us about Jesse Gooding.
My goodness, I have a friend on the executive committee of the NAACP who says he is a walking history of the civil rights movement. Correct. Nearly a century of life. He's a Wilberforce graduate back in, frankly, the year I was born. And he's consistently been supportive. He appears at events. He speaks at events. And he is absolutely an inspiration to everyone who knows his story. You know, one of the real pioneers and one of the real heroes to come out of our community.
And I take he'll be at this event?
Yes, he will.
So this is a celebration of the good fight. Is that you think that's a proper way of putting it?
Well, yeah, you know, we've got heroes, right? We're recognizing there's hardships, there's issues ongoing every day. Every weekend, it seems that there's something else that causes people to be very concerned about the rule of law and what's ahead. So we're lawyers. My goodness, if we're not going to stand up and speak out on this, nobody will. The rule of law is strengthened by those who stand firm in challenging moments. We want to bring together the legal community, civic leaders, the two other organizations that are co-sponsoring this with us, and recognize people who have taken that stand, as well as have an opportunity to reflect on that. And it's to honor people, but at the same time, I'm personally very excited by the collaboration of those three groups, which is long overdue. It's for us all work together.
That was local attorney Gary Lepla speaking with WISO's Mike Frazier. Again, that event took place on Tuesday. And a note, the law firm Lepla Associates is a financial supporter of WISO.
This is Bird Note. Mating for life may be the human ideal, but most bird species in North America mate for a single breeding season. Some may team up with the same mate the following year, just because both stay in, or return to, the same territory. But such togetherness is relatively rare. Because most birds of the North Temperate Zone migrate, remaining in touch with a mate throughout the autumn and winter is difficult. For instance, fewer than one-fifth of song sparrow pairs are reunited. For long-term fidelity, look among the larger birds. Large resident birds such as hawks, eagles, and ravens have wide territories, meaning few contacts with the opposite sex. Maintaining a relationship through the winter may assure breeding in the next season. You'll often see such birds in pairs throughout the year. Most seabirds meet and breed in colonies, but marbled murrelets, little relatives of puffins, breed inland in old-growth forests. They have no chance to meet each other in a colony, so when a male and a female get together, they stay together. In the animal realm, birds still provide the best examples of seasonal mate fidelity. Most birds form devoted pairs for at least each breeding season, not something that can be said for most mammals. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Bird Note, bringing to a close this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. The series is also a podcast. You can download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead. I'm Jerry Kenny. Lots more highlights and conversations for you next weekend. Please join us then.